Cannon. A great ball opportunity here. It's in. It's Patrick McElhinney.
I'm feeling good.
Here's Hooven. And Hooven gets it.
Delighted to be back, yes.
This is tough.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Well, hello and welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. Our special guest this week is Noel Mooney. He's on secondment from UEFA, overseeing the FAI at the moment, acting FAI General Manager. We're also joined in studio, as is usual, by James O'Toole, who's brought gifts once again, sweetie gifts, so fair play for that. And Alan Cawley, a man never short of an opinion, but as I say, our special guest this week is Noel Mooney. Noel, we'll talk about your role with UEFA and the role you've had over the last few months overseeing the FAI very shortly. But a lot of people will know your name, but they won't necessarily know your background in League of Ireland soccer. Cup winner with Cork City back in the day, but grew up in Limerick, having been born, your early years spent in London, is that right?
Yeah, I suppose I was born across the road from Arsenal's old stadium on Holloway Road. And my father would have brought me to see David O'Leary, Frank Stapleton, Liam Brady, Pat Jennings, etc. So there was a great love of football from day one. And then at 4 years of age, I came back to the west of Ireland, where there probably wasn't the same love in my village for the game of soccer, as we call it. So it was very much a GAA area. And for me, I was very defensive of football because that's all I wanted to play. And in school, every spare minute we had, we just played football or soccer.
This is
Capamore. In Capamore, yeah. So we just played football all of the time. And, you know, we didn't have a team. We had GA teams and that, but we didn't have any soccer team. So I had to thumb when I was 11 or 12, which you wouldn't do now, of course. But I used to thumb 3 or 4 miles to play for the local village team. And then I realised I was kind of okay in goals. And I went from there. I got to play for St. Michael's and Tipperary, won the FAI Youth Cup in 1994, beating Salthill Devon in the final in Limerick. And then I went to Limerick FC as goalkeeper. I only played a few games there, actually. And then Dave Barry took over at Cork City. My last game for Limerick was a Munster Cup final, senior cup final in Turner's Cross. The great Alec Ludzik was playing in goals for Cork, actually. But they had a really good side, Cork. They had Dave Barry, Liam Murphy, John Caulfield, Declan Daly, Billy Woods, Garrett Crone. It was a really good side. And I was in goals for Limerick. I think I was 17 or 18 at the time. And I played it okay. We won. We beat Cork that day. Dave Barry got the job that summer. And I think I was his first sign in the following season. And it was the same week, actually. It was a great summer. Oasis played 2 concerts down in Cork. Labour had just taken control of England. So it was like a new buzz going around the place. In the same week I signed, he signed Ollie Cahill from Northampton Town, Derek Collin. I think he was from Brighton. Noel Hartigan, Patsy Frayne came back, who was a beautiful footballer, the best footballer I've ever seen in terms of natural ability in the league. And he signed Phil Harrington back, actually, who was a hero of mine. I started following Cork City, even though I was from Limerick, in 1989. Transvision Vamp were number one in the charts with Baby I Don't Care.
A lot of musical references to your career here.
And when I remember I was watching the Cup Final and Cork City came out. It was 89. It was the year before Germany wore that beautiful,
great year, wonderful year.
Well, the year before Derry, I think, had won the treble with De Gama and Vodica and all these guys. So 89, it was Cork City and Derry in the final. It was in Dalymount Park. It was wet on a Sunday. I remember watching Phil Harrington come out and instantly I was in love. I just loved his style. He had the World Cup boots with the tongues perfect, the Adidas gloves, everything. But it was the Cork City kit. They seemed to get the German kit before the Germans got it.
Right.
So they were like, there was some guy called Michael O'Connell who owned 3 stripes in Ireland, I found it afterwards. But Cork City had this beautiful German type kit. So I remember Dave Barry hit the crossbar that day and Harrington was superb for Cork City. So I kind of had this liking for Cork City. So when the chance came up to join Cork City...
You wanted one of those jerseys.
Well, for me it was like joining Real Madrid or something, because you walked into a dressing room and you had the likes of Declan Daly and John Caulfield and Dave Barry and these people I just knew from television, really. It was great to join them. And then I was there for 8 or 9 seasons at Cork. We got to win the Cup. We didn't quite win the league. We had 2 years where we were really close to win the league. St. Pat's under Liam Buckley, Pat Dolan, Stola Marchant, Shelburne then came very strong. But we won the FAI Cup in 98 against a really good Shelburne side.
After a replay, wasn't it?
After a replay, it was nil-all in the first game and 1-0 in the second, so 2 clean sheets, you might have noticed. and then in 99, it was New Year's Day 99, Noel Harton got the winner when we beat Shamrock Rovers to win the League Cup in Turner's Cross. I mean, we'll talk about the future of the league obviously soon, but I just remember Turner's Cross being packed all the time. It was just jammers. You know, you'd play in front of the shed and it was like they were sucking the ball out of the goal. So someone would take a shot, you didn't feel they could score because there were so many Corkonians behind you. It was great days. And it was funny for me going from Limerick, because at Limerick when I started, there wasn't that much confidence in the dressing room. Limerick were languishing at the bottom of the first division when I joined them. I quickly went to Cork and I realised these Cork lads, they had something about them. They loved playing the Shamrock Rovers. They loved playing the St. Pat's or whoever. They had this confidence. I mean, there was...
Cork people with confidence.
Yeah.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah. And you had the older generation, like the Caulfields and Daly's and Morley's and all these lads. But then you had the younger group, like Colin O'Brien, who's now under 15 or under 17 manager, sorry. And we had the likes of Jimmy Barry Murphy's son, Brian, playing. And it was just a group, and a friend of Alan's, Conor O'Grady, joined us. And there was lads like Mark Herrick came in, and it was just a beautiful time. It was just, you know, you look back, you felt like you could beat anybody. I mean, if you went to the Brandywell and they scored, you felt, you looked around your teammates and you felt that you could come back. You didn't panic. Whereas there's other clubs, I went to Shamrock Rovers a bit later for a year under Liam Buckley, who was really good to work with, I have to say. But the club was in a difficult position. They weren't in Tala at that stage. They were still playing out in Inchicore, you know, tenants, and the club was a bit all over the place. And you didn't, if we went a goal down, you felt that was it. Whereas at Cork, you just felt that, and they were moving forward. I mean, I was replaced by Mick Devine, who went on to have a brilliant career at Cork. It was a very nice time. It was the move between amateur football and professional. I chose, or maybe they chose for me, I don't know, not to go professional. And then I started to focus on, I suppose, more the business side, which was marketing, business, etc. And that took me, I suppose, to finishing being a player and going into administration, I guess, and the marketing.
So you went into marketing, eventually became the promotions officer, the overall promotions officer for the FAI. How pleased were you with the role that you performed? Because you left the FAI in 2011, but working under, you know, as part of the FAI, developing the game in this country, when you look back on it now, how do you feel you did?
Well, what happened was, there was a Genesis report, I think, in 2004, which talked about us taking over a merger between the league clubs and the FAI. And the clubs, it was a mess in many ways. You won the league and they almost collapsed quite instantly. I think Shelburne won the league and collapsed. Drogheda won the league and collapsed. So the league really was in a mess in terms of, you know, people were chasing. So you may know this, but the league was taking in 12 million but spending 19 million at one stage. So there was... the concept of merging the league with the FAI to put more discipline, rules, regulations, and the idea was we'd market the league better. That was the concept back in 2006, 2007. So we took over the league. It was just after that brilliant final in Lansdowne Road in the rain when Derry and St. Pat's, I think it was
4-3.
Amazing day. So we started that December. And we took over the league, I suppose, in January with things like the participation agreement. You may know that UEFA adopted the financial fair play rules for European football based on concepts we came with, which was the 65% protocol. So there was a guy called Padraig Smith, who's now the CEO of Colorado Rapids. I joined from the club promotion side. So the idea from my side certainly was to embed the club more in the community. And if you look at, for example, Sligo Rovers, we brought in a guy called Keith O'Dwyer, who did really good work in terms of the schools and the community groups. There was a number of clubs that did really, really well with that programme. And I felt we were going in the right way. But what happened was that was 2007, 2008. Then, of course, you had the Aviva Stadium, the Vantage Club scheme, of course, which really was designed to provide money for the association in all levels for the next 10 years. That failed. And once that failed, it put all of the Irish game under pressure, I suppose. It didn't reach its potential, that's for sure. And what it meant was that all budgets were looked at. There was a recession, as you know, Lehman Brothers collapsed and all that stuff. So, you know, I suddenly found that I had a bit of a marketing budget that was taken away. The subsidies for the club promotions officers were just taken away. The strategy of the league, the prominence of the league in terms of what we're trying to do was gone. And it was at that point that I realised that there was no future at the FAI. There was a lot of changes happening. So I agreed with the FAI that I would finish. But funnily enough, what happened was I'd been doing presentations in UEFA on the future of the European game. They asked me to write a paper on how should European football move going forward. It was quite a long document I wrote. I sent it to them and they asked me to meet to discuss it. So as I was leaving one train, it was kind of coincidence. There was no real correlation between it. I was finishing with the FAI, and at the same time, UEFA independently asked me to go and meet them. They offered me a role to support all of the 53 federations at the time in terms of growing them and supporting them to grow. So it was good timing from a personal perspective, and I was delighted to take it. So, I mean, if anyone thinks that the FAI helped me get into UEFA, I can absolutely assure you nothing could be further from the truth.
Okay, you're back with the FAI. It's a temporary move from UEFA. You've been very busy with UEFA over the last few years. When you got the call to return here, given all of the chaos and the fallout from those revelations from Mark Tighe in the Sunday Times, what was your initial reaction when you were asked about coming back to give the FAI a dig out?
It's important to give you a small bit of context. So when I went to UEFA, originally I was helping the federations with their commercial performance, so sponsorship, TV rights, etc., which is something I'd studied and, I suppose, you know, invest a lot of time in to understand and to work on. But what happened was then a new president came into UEFA, and I suppose I was moved more into a political role. And in that role, it was more about, I built a program called GROW. So it's called UEFA GROW. And what we did was we took over the strategic advice to all the federations. So in UEFA, I'd be the person who would go to the federation to help them with their entire strategy, business planning, governance, all of the different areas. Now, it's not me. I have a huge team there that work in different areas. So there's a guy from Donegal, for example, who manages participation to ensure that every federation has a clear participation and retention and growth plan. So when the FAI got into trouble, when this happened and the revelations came in the Sunday Times of the lack of governance and the misdemeanors, etc., I suppose I had been working with the FAI quite a lot because through funding, I mean, UEFA is clearly the biggest partner for the FAI by a very long way. So I would manage the Scandinavian Federation's relationships directly, Britain and Ireland. So I would know them all very well. And I almost felt like that when the FAI got in trouble, I suppose to the board of the FAI, it was a natural choice because my job was to work with every federation from Germany to Andorra on their overall strategy in all of the different areas. So almost, I suppose, for them, it was like, this is the person who does it for UEFA, all the federations. He's Irish. He loves Irish football. He's able to manage the relationships with FIFA, UEFA. I would know the sponsors of the FAI quite well because some of them deals were done when I was back there 10 years ago. I would understand the membership. The membership of the FAI is a very interesting patchwork quilt of different things, whether it's schools or the schoolboys or women's football or the League of Ireland. There's a lot of different interests. Because I grew up in it, I understood it. So they needed someone, I suppose, who could hit the ground running. If you brought somebody in from Belgium to just start looking at it would take you months. They couldn't afford that time. So they needed somebody, despite the pressure that came from the outside, that came from the likes of the minister and different people, I guess, and from the public.
Yeah, the Minister for Sport, Shane Ross, clearly wasn't happy with your appointment. He saw you as part of the old regime. How do you respond to that?
Well, I didn't understand it in many ways because I was middle management at the FAI. I had nothing to do with decision making. I had nowhere else to go when I was, you know, if you wanted a job in football, you either worked at your local electricity league club, which I did at Limerick. I got my job in the FAI from working at Limerick in commercial for a short spell. The job came up with the FAI. I advertised online. I got the job. I didn't know anybody in the FAI except some guys we'd have played with who were coaches. I worked in the FAI for a number of years. I thought I did okay.
But isn't that the point, you know, the fact that you were there before, there was a perception perhaps that you were part of the old regime. You made some comments talking about John Delaney. He said, this was in a few years back, he's always been an inspiration to work with. And then at the AGM in 2017, less than 2 years ago, the FAI is one of our most progressive and well-run federations. It really is a super federation and you can be proud of yourselves, the board and the members here. So when the minister reads something like that, surely it's only natural that he assumes that you're aligned to John Delaney and the old ways of the FAI.
Well, let me take each of them piece by piece, first of all. When I came back in 2017, I actually wasn't supposed to speak at that particular Congress. Normally what you do is an exco member, a board member would speak. So I got a very late call because I managed the relationships with the federations. The exco member couldn't go, so I had to late just arrive. And I'm a diplomat. When I go out as an administrator or as someone representing UEFA, I can't turn up at the Congress and say that you're doing a really bad job and we think you should do better. It's something you go in, it's diplomatic. I'm not an auditor. I'm not somebody who had privy to any of their accounts or any of the governance issues. How would I would look at it from the football growth perspective. And to give you a sense of that, if you speak to Robbie Keane or Damien Duff about our coach education at the FAI and how we develop coaches, for example, if you take that as an area, The FAI is one of the best in Europe in terms of how we do B, A license, pro license. That is undisputed because there's measurements of that. If you talk about grassroots, so UEFA would measure federations on a thing called a grassroots charter. You've gold, silver, bronze. 2 weeks ago, the FAI went gold on that, which is how we develop football at a grassroots level. Now, obviously in Ireland, we've got huge competitions with other sports and the other sports are performing extremely well. So we have benchmarks we can measure ourselves against. But in UEFA, we've measurements for federations. And in certain areas, the FAI is doing well. And if you have to go back in context as well, if you look at 2002, 2003, 2004, all them years, there was a real instability about the FAI back then. So you had a new general secretary almost every year. There was a lot of infighting and that kind of stuff. So the FAI moved on in terms of we didn't have the infighting, but what you got was the reverse. You had suppression of criticism. You had, and hindsight is a wonderful thing, but you know, the more you look, and on Wednesday we will be with Neil Horgan launching his book looking at the FAI in hindsight. You know, there was certainly criticism was not well accepted, I would say. There was things the FAI could have done a hell of a lot better, and that's what we have to strive towards now and to make the FAI better. But certainly when I turned up to speak at a Congress, I think it's unfair to put someone's entire career on something that they said at a Congress they turned up late to act as a diplomat. I mean, when I go back to UEFA, if I had said the FAI were doing an extremely bad job, that doesn't go down particularly well, as you would imagine, when you go back to UEFA. So, I mean, I would go to many Congresses. I was at the Turkish Congress just before I started back here at the FAI. I mean, I don't know Turkey's accounts. I don't know exactly their governance. But I mean, when I turn up in a UEFA role, then you would say that Turkey's doing well in certain areas. That's quite a natural, I suppose, thing to do. So I think it's really unfair that people would say that you can't manage the FAI in interim period just because you worked there at middle management level and because you said some nice things about them. I think that's really short-sighted, and I think that's a mistake.
All right, we have lots of areas we want to get into, but let's open it up to the rest of the table, Alan.
On that one, Noel, just interesting you say that you were acting as a diplomat. So rather than blow smoke, would you not have been better not kind of playing it a bit more safer if that was the case?
Yeah, in hindsight, I mean, I didn't realise that I would be coming back here. That wasn't on anyone's agenda. But I suppose, I mean, in truth, I think that was in Kilkenny or something at the AGM in 2017. I literally wrote the speech on the way down kind of type thing. And I just said, look.
But for someone who was obviously so heavily involved as you were, and you're after outlining all the years playing and a keen follower of the League of Ireland, then being involved with all the different teams that you were, even though you went to UEFA, surely you were still looking in from the outside. And it was clear to see that the league was struggling for a long time. So to come back then and be, the FAI is great and John Delaney's great and everyone, like, it probably didn't sit well with people. Now, I know what you're saying in terms of you were in that role and maybe that was the right thing to say at the time. But certainly from people's perceptions from the outside, it was clear to see that all is not well in Irish football. And if you were as keen a follower as you were saying you were, and I've no doubt you were, like, people straight away will jump to it and say, like, who's he trying to cod here?
Look, I would agree with you in hindsight, knowing now, especially what we know, I would have toned that down for sure. I would say, as a League of Ireland person, like I think everybody in this studio, I would certainly have felt that the League of Ireland could have been given a lot more attention, a lot more investment, which I hope we'll speak about in the next few minutes.
Well, that's the general feeling out there, that it's been neglected. For me, as a playing experience, now obviously involved, going to matches, watching matches, love the league like us all. But there was a serious neglect towards the league over many number of years.
I would not disagree with you. I think that there was things that were done that were, I mean, we spoke earlier about the salary cost protocol, for example. I mean, that was a positive. There are things, for example, as I said, about the coaching side of the FAI, we've developed a lot of very decent coaches, etc. In the last few years, the introduction of the under 13s, 15s, 17s, 19s. So I think it's unfair to say that there was complete neglect. However, all that said, can we do a hell of a lot better? Absolutely. Should we have much better stadia, for example, infrastructure? Should we have much better structures in our clubs? Should we have much better marketing of the league? Should we have much better attendances, broadcast deals, sponsorships, partnerships, all of that stuff? I mean, for me, it's quite natural because I work with leagues and federations around Europe. I see the best of what's out there. And as an Irish person that loves the league no more than yourself, I believe we've a hell of a long way to go. It's not, for me, it's quite funny because when I close my eyes, I can see what the league can look like. I'm only here for a short period, but I would hope that even in this period that we will set in motion And as you know, there's a hell of a lot of discussions in this very week and in the last few weeks with the clubs, whether it's an All-Ireland League or whether an All-Ireland League or whether it's, you know, a better version of what we have. Mm. That there's a long way to go, but I believe the mood and the spirit of the clubs for big change is there. I just hope that they'll take it. It can't be the FAI on its own that decide we're going to go. The clubs have to go with the FAI or whatever entity takes the league forward. I think all of us have a good feeling that we can do it now, but we cannot go as we have been doing over the last many years, which is piecemeal. What you'd love to do is sit down with the club, sit down with the government, sit down with the broadcasters, the partners, and put one big holistic plan for the next 10, 20, 30 years to say this is what our league can look like in terms of infrastructure, marketing.
But I think that's the point that we're at, isn't it, Noel, in terms of the crossroads that we're at, because this is our time now to make the change. The other little thing, and there's many things, I suppose, false, and I'm not here just to point out false, as you say, the pathways with the 13s, the 15s, all that kind of stuff. And I would also agree in terms of the clubs have to take more responsibility. Sometimes I think it's easy for the clubs to just say, oh, well, it's the FEI's fault. Absolutely, the clubs need to take more responsibility. So I'm one who is looking for a fairness and a solution rather than just saying, well, this is wrong and this is wrong. Just on that, the coach and pathway thing, and you mentioned Robbie Keane and Damien Duff, and obviously a lot of those fellas are fast-tracked through their coaching badges because of maybe the name and the profile that they have. But what about the fellas who are, would you feel as though the money that they're paying in terms of an outlay towards an A licence or a pro licence, and then you look at the industry here and there's only a number of jobs, and there was a rule, I know probably it wasn't of your making, but you're given, people are taking over roles and they don't even have the qualification, yet the fellow who has the qualification, the pro licence, people can sometimes feel a bit aggrieved over things like that as well.
You're absolutely right. I mean, for example, we've got about 60 pro licence holders here in Ireland. There's not 60 jobs.
No.
There's not 60 full-time jobs.
And the cost on that, Noel, do you think that's a fair outlay?
Well, I know from benchmarking across Europe that what we have is fine in terms of, as I say, if you look at countries around us, I think the IFA, I think they come in a bit cheaper, to be fair, the IFA. But I do know that the...
Sorry, just for the benefit of listeners, what is the cost?
Well, it depends on the licence you're going for.
Okay. Just give us a ballpark so people have an idea.
So A licence, I don't know, is it 6,000?
Yeah, I think the pro's up on 8, 8.5.
Yeah. So, like, you're
which
right.
It's a lot of money, like, you
it's
know.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel, though, as if it's catered towards an industry in England, it's alright for people like that, where people are going doing these courses feeling there's plenty of jobs available at the end of them. You look at people here and sometimes I wonder, yeah, it probably comes back to the broader argument that is the industry here.
But let me go back now to the difficulties. It's just an example of the difficult decisions you have to make. So say, for example, our licensing criteria changed that meant that a Premier League club had to have a pro license holder. So that was trying to get the highest standards. These people have reached the highest standard in terms of coaching qualification. So licensing brought in that rule. We've already seen that rule having to, I don't know, it's been ignored by some clubs. I mean, the league champions, and that makes it more difficult for us to argue in favour of it. The league, I mean, Vinnie Port didn't have a pro licence. So
we have a situation now with Amaris at Shelburne, but they're gone back on the rule now. It's a different rule now.
So it's really difficult because you put down a really hard and fast rule saying that a Premier League club has to have a pro licence to protect these very people you're talking about who've invested in their future and put a lot of money into their career. And then you've got a, I suppose, a rollback is the truth in terms of we have Dundalk, which is where Vinnie Port is the coach. John Gill is the manager. I don't know how exactly it works, but
John
there is
the
someone
pro license,
he's got the pro license. So like, it'll be interesting as the league goes forward when I suppose the clubs become more and more involved in making the rules. And when you make rules, you don't want to roll back on them or break them, etc. So it's always that balance. I mean, 60 people, as we know, have the pro license. There isn't that many jobs. And I hope as we develop football here, there will be jobs for these coaches. That
the only other, and this last two questions, sorry, Noel, but this is more aligned on, I suppose, a couple of things I might have brought up was pre-U, but now obviously say in the last few months, the one around the club promotions officer, which you initially came in as, how much of a loss do you feel has that been to the clubs? Because as you say, there was good work being done, and I know we hit tough times, the recession around that time as well, but in terms of going forward, say for example, if you were looking at things to progress the league, is that something you would be budgeting for people to have now as clubs themselves?
Oh, and I'd go further than that. I would say that we should be contributing and more centralised in terms of the CEOs of the clubs, because one of the experiences I had from that programme was you can bring in a very good club promotions officer, But if the CEO or general, if they don't buy into it, or the board don't buy into it, or, you know, the structure isn't right, this brilliant CPO gets swallowed up. So if I had the time again, I would say that the new league should be contributing or subsidising the CEO of the club, and the CEO of the league should be meeting with the CEOs of the clubs. I mean, I went to America to look at the model of the MLS. Very centralised system. Bit, I suppose, like the IRFU have with their provinces. So they've got centralised playing contracts, as you know. The CEOs will report to the IRFU and all that. So I really like that. I think that because the size of our country, etc., I would love if the CEO of the league was meeting the CEOs of the clubs every couple of weeks. You know, how are you getting on with your targets for attendances? How are you getting on with your sponsorship stuff? The community side is one element of it. It's a very important element, as you know, from Sligo. I thought Keita Dwyer did a brilliant job, I have to say. I thought he did a magnificent job in terms of what they were doing up there. But you need the bigger structure to work as well. And I would be a personal, you know, I would personally favour a more centralised approach, actually. I mean, we're moving towards a situation where the clubs are getting much more control. If you want me to talk about the makeup of the NLEC, which runs the league now, it'll be 9 members, 5 coming from the clubs, 2 independents, 1 from the council, 1 from the board, who could be club linked as well. So the clubs really are running the league. Let's be very clear on that going forward. The changes that have happened recently means the clubs running the league. They've got a brilliant opportunity to write their own future. We're merely facilitating the clubs writing their own future. But I must say, and I'd be quite strong with them in saying, I still believe that it can't turn into, I suppose, what we saw before the FA took over the league, which was a bit the Wild West, where the rules kind of went out the window a bit. There needs to be rules, there needs to be regulations. I personally would favour a centralised approach where there's a strong CEO for the league with strong CEOs in each of the clubs, and then the structure where it's club promotions officers, commercial managers or head of academies, all that comes. I'd like to see us develop a really strong template for what a strong club looks like, and they're there. And I don't want to say force, that's unfair, to have the rules and regulations to ensure that clubs certainly strive towards that. We do with coaching what we tried to do with the pro licence holder, etc. We tried our best with it. But I think it's not just the manager, it's the entire club. Because, as you know, you can have a brilliant manager, but if the club itself is not organised properly, then it falls apart. So, yeah.
The last thing then for me, Noel, and this, I presume, falls under your remit. The cup final, I said here a couple of weeks ago that we should be targeting 40,000 for that cup final. And in my opinion, that's realistic for the two teams that's involved, the quality that's involved. At the moment, say in the last 2-3 weeks, when would the conversations have started in terms of planning for that? Because all I've seen at the moment, because I was shouting about, now again, it probably comes back to finances and resources and budgets and all that. But I'd like to think there was stuff, there was money left aside or whatever, the budget was left aside in terms of a marketing campaign to achieve that goal. And this is our showpiece day. So all I've seen at the moment is a poster online last week that was released of the launch that was down there from the two captains, both the women's match and the men's match. I've yet to hear a radio advert, a TV advert, a pictures on walls, whatever the case may be. Because if you compare the likes of, say, the Gaelic and what the women's have done in terms of the finals, and they're looking to break records all the time, striving for that extra bit, do you think it's enough at the moment to have a poster online of what went out last week?
Well, a poster online wouldn't be enough, for sure. There is a plan coming, which will be radio ads and all that stuff, the TV side.
But we're like 12 days out from the match.
That's fair. We have a budget.
And the pricing as well. How come it went up the extra price as well?
Well, we have got costs around the cup final. The cup final would typically cost us, you know, to open the Aviva and the amount of security around and all that kind of stuff does cost. So at the FAI, we have to make business decisions like anybody else. Like, clubs have to decide their own ticket and price. And so we had the same price from 2009, I think it was. 10 euro.
10 euro, yeah.
Now, if anybody tells me that 15 euro...
No, I agree. 15 is fine, especially for, the quality that's on.
Yeah.
I wondered where that decision came from.
Yeah, the decision came from a business decision. I would certainly have been around that, because we still have to bring in money into the association to fund the development of the sport. In terms of the marketing, you will see TV ads, you will see radio ads, you'll see online stuff. There's a great guy working on graphic design who's created
Paul.
Some...
He's very good.
He's really good, actually.
Nadanovic,
We've really enjoyed working so far. So he'll get started. As I said, there's radio ads booked, all that stuff. In terms of, from a marketing perspective, you don't want to go too early and you don't want to go too late. So it's trying to get the timing right. If you go too early, you can burn money that we don't have in the budget. So we have to get the budget, optimise the budget. There's programmatic advertising, which is online stuff that's booked as well, which is targeting people on Facebook, for example, who like football, who live in the certain areas of the clubs, etc. So all that is booked. I hope you get to see quite a bit of it over the next few days. Should there be more, Alan? Yes, there should be more. Could there be more generally for the league? Yes, but I suppose if you look at the amount, and it's a very, this is a very interesting point, I think, because when you come in to take over the running of the FAI, you have a lot, like we had the Women's International against the Ukraine, which was a record crowd. Yep. We did it in conjunction with 20 by 20, which was great. It was 5,500, 6,000 or something at it. With the Under 21 International, with Stephen Kenny against Italy, which was 6,000, 7,000 or something. So Tala is starting to fill, which is great. We have to build that other stand now, South Dublin County Council, to fill the next games that are coming, etc. But the discussion with the clubs, I think it's a very valid one, is the idea to come into the FAI. Absolutely, in my opinion, was the right thing back then. Back when it had to be, it was a little bit all over the place, as I say, with the finance, etc. That's much better now. The clubs are much better run, in my view, now. Many of them are much better run. But I think this is a really exciting time to be a League of Ireland fan, because you've got discussions on Thursday with Kieran Lucid and clubs from North and South discussing the potential of an All-Ireland League. You have us, which is incumbents on the FAI, working on a better version of ourselves. So if the All-Ireland League doesn't happen in the short enough time frame that's outlined 2021, we still have to build a better version of ourselves no matter what happens. We have to do that. And one of my observations in the short time being back is that people in the FAI do get dragged around the place because there's international matches and all of this going on. I don't think that's right. I think the league now very much deserves its focus. So whether the league stays within the association or it's some hybrid model, it needs to have its own CEO of the league. It needs to have its own commercial director, marketing director, who is not dragged into international football or dragged into marketing something else. They have to be 100% focused on our domestic game. There is nobody who believes in the league any more than I or us around it. Like, we really believe in this league.
But that, see, for you saying that, Noel, right? And I believe that you're genuine in saying that. The one thing, criticism I will have always had over the last few years, is that there wasn't enough appetite amongst people in the governing body to actually feel the same way as what maybe we feel. For you speaking like that, and maybe you're, and you are speaking on their behalf, I don't know, and there's still a lot of people from the previous regime, is the appetite there now?
I think that there's an appetite for many people there. Not everybody. Not everybody does love our league. Some people are into different things, I suppose, or different leagues and that. But certainly, I mean, there's a love for the league and the FAI. There's no question about that. Was there enough? Was there enough in the decision-making side of things? My view is no. I think there was...
Well, it's clear to see.
Yeah. I mean, there was times where I believe that we could have done a lot more, invested more, been more strategic in the league. I think now is the time to do it. And for me, it's interesting because I got this early introduction to the FAI 10 or 12 years, whatever it was. I saw the good stuff that they did, and I saw the stuff that I would be even more frustrated than you, Alan, in some of the things that I would have felt they could have gone much further in, to be fair. So for me, it was nice to see it, to go away to Europe, to look at how European leagues operate and European federations operate. And I actually thought it was quite good to come back then, to be able to look at it with a fresh pair of eyes. It's very clear in my head what we need to do. I won't be here to do it, but I'm clear in my head what the league needs to do. So I hope I can have some input into it. But do the FAI need to do more for the League of Ireland? Hell yes.
Going back to your marketing points and stuff like that, as Alan's saying about the cup final coming up, and you're talking about this plan's being in action, that plan's being in action. Are the sponsors buying into this? Are the sponsors of the league buying into this? Are the sponsors of the cup buying into this? Or are they just giving over a couple of quid and going to the FAI? Here you go, you deal with it.
I think it's a very good question, because it goes back to the point I made to Alan a few minutes ago, which is about focus. So if you're focused on partners, you bring in a partner that will spend, but they'll multiply that spend in terms of how they activate the competition. Now, if your eyes are not fully focused on the prize, then you'll come at it quite late and you'll do a deal that is financially based to fund the competition but may not have the activation that you want around it because you've got to pay for the competition. Now, if you take the cup, for example, we are with a media partner who were a very good sponsor. We needed them. Yeah. They came in and I really thank them for their support. for the cup because they've created funding. They have a plan themselves, but when you go at any media partner for a competition, you exclude other people because they will shy away from it. So, as you know, the cup this year is extra.ie and is next year, which is part of the Daily Mail group. And we are so appreciative to Paul Henderson, the guys, for sponsoring the cup. And I think they'll do a very good activation around the final, etc. themselves. But they're operating off their own channels, of course. Now, will the other media outlets pick up on it or promote it in the way if we had a different brand, for example, a non-media brand? That's a question, you know, if you think it through. Now, if you take the league, for example, some partners will take a product that's name-checked a lot because it's name-checked a lot on the radio and different things, and that suits their agenda. So it means if you keep calling it a Brand Flakes League or something like that, they're looking for a media spend. Their activation then is not as important to them possibly. So to answer your questions, we're very appreciative of the partners we have. Could we do in the next cycle of sponsorships? So UEFA, we sell on 3-year cycles for Champions League and Europa League, for example. Whatever the league takes, it'll be 2021 before a new league with new brands and that kicks off. So 2020 is set as you were with the existing partners. So I will only be complimentary, as I have to be, about our existing partners. But when
so you're
we're
being
selling,
a diplomat again, no?
I am. So you might and I'll probably pay for that as well, Alan, somewhere on the line.
These guys use their own marketing campaigns. They use their own marketing companies in Dublin City Centre or whatever.
Yeah.
But they don't seem to be using it for these two organisations. They seem to be leaving it down to you guys. And in fairness to the people in the FEI, I don't know how many marketing majors there are sitting out in Abbottstown that come up with these ideas. Whereas they have at their access companies who do this 24/7. And they don't seem to be activating that at all. Yeah. And that brings back to Alan's with his... Oh, we're 12 days out and we haven't heard anything. We're not 12 days out. We're 6 months into this competition and we haven't heard anything. We're not 12 days out from a final. We're 6 months in and we haven't heard about the FEI Cup.
Well, look, I would share your frustrations. When I came home, I put on the television and all I saw was other sports sponsors and partners on TV. I mean, it was just one after the other.
Like they're all stealing a march. They've stolen a march.
I didn't see anywhere near enough football, and never mind the international team or three do a very good job for us in terms of as an activator for us. However, in terms of domestic football, I don't just mean the professionally, but other areas of the game as well, whether it's the women's side of the game. Are we doing enough? Absolutely not. But you can do what you've got. If you're asking me, in our new partnerships for the next cycle, which is 21 possibly to 24, whether the FEI is involved in it or whether it's the All-In League concept, they have to get partners that are not just about cash. They have to get partners who get out there and spend. I mean, if you study sponsorship, it should be 1-to-1 minimum. So if you're spending €800,000 on a sponsorship, it should be €800,000 minimum on it. Now, working at UEFA in the Champions League, we've got partners, whether it be, I mean, Heineken is a very good example, MasterCard. They spend, as you know, tens and sometimes more than tens of millions of euros to sponsor our UEFA Champions League. I have a lot of exposure to it naturally, and I can see what they do with it. It's quite phenomenal. I mean, you would know if you turn on the TV, you would know it's the UEFA Champions League just by the partners around the pitch. You can see MasterCard, you can see Heineken, etc. I'm sorry to name check here, Adrian, sorry about that. But it's just a fact. I mean, the partners really drive a competition. If you look at the rugby, for example, again, I'm sorry to name check, but it was the Heineken Cup back in the day. They did a wonderful job, I have to say, for the competition. Guinness do a great job for rugby as well in the Six Nations, etc.
That's down to tier one, tier two, tier three partnerships. Like.
We absolutely, in the next cycle, need to ensure, yes, we need the cash. We need the money to pay for the competitions that we can distribute back out to the clubs. But activation, and that does come down to focus. We need people far more. So I was explaining to the clubs recently in the meetings that we had, if, for example, for whatever reason, the All-Ireland League doesn't kick off in 2021, just say if that doesn't occur for whatever reason, and we're absolutely open to happening and supportive in as many ways as
we can. Would you like to see that happen, though?
I think it's got great potential. Mm. I think there's a few barriers that need to be overcome, but certainly from the FEI's perspective, whatever's the right thing to do for professional football in the country.
But so to say, out of all the discussions that have taken place so far in terms of the clubs and all that stuff, and I know you said there's another meeting, say from your own personal view or personal point of view, Is that the number one you'd like to see? Because I know the discussions around the formats and all that stuff a couple of weeks ago, that doesn't really excite people the way you'd want
No, I suppose people talk about formats, 10, 12, split seasons and all that kind of stuff. I mean, the FA are making no decision on this, by the way. I have to say, we're facilitating the discussion with the clubs. And I must say, the spirit, we had a meeting recently just before the Women's International, the day of the Ukraine match, in the hotel across from the... Tala Stadium. I thought the spirit was great with the clubs. There is a sense of new winds blowing through the association, new winds going through the clubs. They know it's their decision to make. At the same time, the FA have to make business decisions as well. We've been very transparent with the clubs, how much it costs to run the league, what money comes into the league as well, so they can balance, is there a cost to the FA? I think there was a sense that there wasn't as much transparency as there could be. I don't think the clubs could say that now. They've seen what the league costs to run, etc. We are really excited because the leagues will make a decision. We have to kind of guide them a bit, at least give our experience of different things. We brought in a couple of great guys from UEFA who would work on our Champions League, Europa League, work with leagues like Denmark, Estonia, and different leagues. They're used to doing this. I think the clubs appreciated their facilitation of the whole process. We had a lot of discussion around commercial, what you said early, James.
Well, that's something that I felt as well was lacking for a long time, that you should be looking at best practice across countries that are similar size to us, like comparing us to the Premier League, and it's a nonsense.
With your Grow campaign, as you were saying earlier on, with these, there was obviously KPIs put in place for that.
Yeah.
But obviously the FAI ignored them, or else they sent you back forms.
No, I mean, if you take the Grow campaign, for example, the Grow campaign, which is to grow European football, do you have a strategic plan? So the FAI have a strategic plan, which is 20, and this is an important point we'll come to actually about the League of Ireland, because the FAI have a strategic plan 2016 to 2020. Today in Abbottstown, there's lots of people from around the game of football in Ireland in Abbottstown discussing what the new strategy could look like. Now, I won't be there to implement it, but what we'd like to do, and the clubs are speaking about this now, I don't believe that the League of Ireland was an absolute priority. It needs to be called out now. The FAI's plan going forward, trust, governance, of course, has to be at the front of it. You know, the FAI being trusted and being open, transparent, great governance, great processes, that has to be number one for lots of reasons. But in terms of the football side, if the League of Ireland, and the Women's National League, by the way, is not called out now as having a much more professional, much better attended, much more money, if it's not called out now, when will it be called out?
That's very true. And like, if we go back to even talk about the Women's National League, you've got one game left for both teams, Shelburne and Piemont. And for the Shelburne game to take place on a Wednesday evening, and the Piemont game take place on the Saturday evening. That to me makes, I'm not too sure why that's happened. That makes nonsense to me, because it comes down to those two games. If you had them back to back or on at the same time, it creates a buzz around that. And something simple like that could change the buzz around the Women's League this weekend. But unfortunately, they've lost that because of the way the fixtures have gone out. And I don't know, as you said, there was no love winning Abbottstown for the league. And Alan mentioned it earlier, the change is coming. The change has to be right. The change has to be thought out. This is probably a once-in-a-lifetime chance we get in league football here. It needs to be thought out. It needs to be looked at. People need to hold their hands up and go, listen, we completely ignored it. Our fault. Let's see how we can move on. And hopefully that is happening.
But by you saying, sorry, Adrian, but by you saying, you keep referencing, I won't be here to implement it. I won't be. So it's all right you talking as passionately as you are. You're going back to UEFA. What happens then?
Well, they'll advertise for a chief executive of the FAI, but the board of the FAI make the decisions of Irish football. The likes of Martin Herity, who comes from Sligo Rovers, of course. So we've got two people from the League of Ireland now on the board. The board, we're waiting to bring in an independent chair and three other independent directors, but you'll have two from the League of Ireland, Dick Shakespeare from UCD, who's got a long history in the league. Then in the way the structures work, the League of Ireland is hugely represented. I mean, I suppose, as League of Ireland people, is it ever represented as, you know, it's never enough. Of course not, but it's much better than it was. I understand your point when you say there was no love in Abbottstown for the League of Ireland. I don't fully agree with that, by the way. There was love for the league, but was there enough? No. Was there a hell of a lot more could be done? Absolutely, yes. But at the same time, the new chief executive will come in early next year. The new board will make the big decisions on the strategy. The job of the CEO, actually, of the FAI is to implement what the board want to do. So the job of the CEO and the administration is to bring to the board concepts and proposals. So say the new CEO says, look, the League of Ireland needs to be called out. The Women's National League needs to be, professional football needs to be developed here. We need to have a lot more professional teams. We need to have bigger stadiums, better stadiums, etc., etc. It's up to the board to say, yes, we're going to call out the league and make it an absolute priority of the association now. this job of the CEO is to then work with the administration to deliver that. So I suppose it's a bit of a change in terms of the boards will decide and the CEO will implement. I mean, that I suppose is always the case. But
and in terms I'll just
go with this one. In terms of you mentioned a while ago that you're clear in your own mind what we need to do to build an industry. You mentioned the word investment. And you won't be around to implement it because your secondment from UEFA is coming to an end. What would your preferred model be for soccer in 5 years' time?
Well, I mentioned earlier about the centralised concept. I think for a country of our size, I think that it should be centralised in terms of we work...
But would you be talking about an All-Ireland League?
Could be an All-Ireland League.
But would that be your preferred outcome?
I'm not... Like, I think it's a good concept. Is that the game changer... I suppose. I mean, at the end of this, I'm from Limerick at the moment. As you know, the club is struggling, it's an examinership, etc. I mean, the club itself, hopefully the association or whoever's running the league can do the job of helping to ensure a better stadium is built, better structures are in place in the club. Because you can go to an All-Ireland League, but if the clubs are not operated correctly, you go back very quickly to the old League of Ireland. You know, the clubs being structured correctly is, for me, absolutely crucial. All-Ireland League, I think it's a really good concept. I think that it certainly can work, of course. It can attract new money, like new partners who are looking across Ireland.
And
new
investments you referenced as well.
Yeah, it can. And there's talk about the governments in post-Brexit era of investing in this. So all that is fine. But at the same time, I mean, if I'm in Limerick, whether we're playing Longford or Larne or Linfield, I mean, Linfield, yeah, great, it's a brand. But at the moment, as a Limerick person, if you sent Ballymena down to Limerick, I'm not sure that would excite the people of Limerick. I think if the club is run properly, has nice infrastructure, has community outreach, people in Limerick can see a vision, investors around Limerick, and I was actually in Limerick over the weekend, listening to people about what could happen in Limerick. If people in Limerick bought into the club, whether it's an All-Ireland League or whether it's a better version of the League of Ireland that we have, then the club will work. I mean, you know, we've all seen clubs go through really good periods and really bad periods. I played at Cork where they had massive crowds. Now, whether that was an All-Ireland League or not, that was not the big issue. The big issue was the club credible? Was it well organised? If the All-Ireland League helps to bring in more money into the clubs, better broadcast deals, better coverage, better global rights, all that stuff that's quite natural for a league, then great. But I think sometimes we jump for some sort of panacea. And we think formats will change things and the number of teams and adding an extra couple of clubs from Northern Ireland will change everything. It won't. It won't change everything.
So this has to be a long-term thing. It's not going to happen in the next couple of years. It could be 10, 15 years before we get the model right.
I don't think it has to take that long. I think the model can be got right quite quickly in terms of good people with vision sitting down. It can't just be the association. It can't just be the clubs. It needs government. It needs partnerships, it needs broadcasters to all come together. And if you get the X factor, if you will, it's like when I work at UEFA, when you go to some federations just aren't ready to grow. Sometimes you just go to a federation and the timing is right. They might have a new regime. They might have new staff have come in, the right people in the right place at the right time, and everything comes together. I hope with the spirit of change that's going through Irish football at the moment, that the timing is right. And with the All-Ireland League, one of the big advantages is post-Brexit, whatever happens there, you know, that the timing is right, the government really get behind, or the two governments really get behind it, the clubs have the appetite to go for it, it's the right timing in terms of broadcast. What you also have to remember as well is the broadcast market is extremely important as well, because if you don't get the right broadcaster who's willing to pay a lot of money to invest in it, I mean, the great leagues around Europe run off broadcast money. At the moment, as you know, we don't get a whole lot of money for the broadcast stuff. We're looking for exposure from the likes of RT, which is great to get eyeballs and all that stuff. But we need money and the clubs need money. I mean, at the moment, the clubs pay to be part of the league. Now, the money comes back, by the way, in terms of prize money, etc. The prize money is between about 400,000 euros. So the money that comes in from the clubs, it's like playing a game of cards. You put your fiver in and the winner takes...
It's a paltry sum, as we all know.
It's a paltry sum, but we don't have the broadcast revenue. We don't have the sponsorship revenue. I mean, the league washes its face. I mean, we've shown the clubs... I mean, there's no rocket science behind
but
this.
But in terms of the stuff where you're saying about the clubs, you're more interested in the clubs being run stringently and properly, more so than, say, formats or a league structure. And to a point, I would agree with you. But, say, for example, I was down in Sligo over the weekend. I was in the showgrounds, and you look at the work that's been done there in terms of the stadium and the infrastructure. Yeah. But an awful lot of that is done from the goodwill of the people in terms of charity and fundraising. They had an event the other night which raised bucket loads of money again. But for that to happen in terms of the clubs, and again, I'm not saying the clubs are innocent and all this, but for that to happen, how much help will come from the governing body? And in terms of you saying government and all those, like the reputational damage that's been probably done to the organisation, how much help can you give them going forward?
I'm really sorry. When I said about the clubs being structured right, that was one important element. But you need people who are running the league now of great vision, great contacts, great negotiation skills, etc., to build a model of the broadcast deal will be critical. Whatever broadcast deal is done for the new league, if that is not a big deal and one that provides money for the clubs. I mean, the concept of a club paying to play in the league is where we are at the moment. What you would want is the clubs not paying to be in the league, but actually receiving money. That's the next step for the league, that they receive a dividend for being part of the league. They don't have to pay to be in the league. That's the next step. In the next deal, just say it's 21 to 24, the broadcast deal and the partnerships that we spoke about, the sponsorships, if you will, the data rights, which is a growing thing, the data. So you do a tender on the data rights, which is the results and the stats around it. That's a growing market, by the way, that can produce revenues for the clubs. The clubs, yes, they have to be structured correctly, but the governing body or whatever entity takes the league forward, whatever's decided there, they need to be fantastic. They need to have really good contacts with government, with the party, all that stuff, because it will take huge jump to get to, in my head, where we need to get to. But you do need to have government with you. I mean, there's no league entity will build stadiums around the country. That does take government and any federation around Europe, the local municipalities, as they call them, we would call them probably county councils, etc.
Yeah.
Like they've done in Talla, a really good job, have built a lovely stadium. We need that replicated around the country. But we do need people of great vision in this league who can provide the resources, the services, the support to the clubs. I mean, you talk about Sligo Rovers, and I know there's a good love of Sligo Rovers within this room as well, Adrian, but there's that's a club that, I mean, we had the league meetings earlier in the year. Martin Herty and David Rowe presented the financial model of the club. I mean, really, it is a testament to the people of Sligo, how much they love their club and what it's every week. It's just unbelievable. Mm. That's fine, but they should be going to another level with funding that's brought to them from the governing body.
But that's my point, Noel. As good and all as the goodwill from the people is, and it's a great soccer
it's another
camp,
level we have to go.
But
absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. You can't keep relying on the goodwill of good people.
Absolutely.
From the town.
We need to be able to provide broadcast finances, not just in Ireland, but abroad. I mean, at the moment, we've got a deal for data kind of streaming externally, which brings a small sum of money that the clubs get through the prize money. It's nowhere near what if I would look. So if you were thinking about investing in a club, so I'm from Limerick, I was thinking of investing in Limerick now today, I would look at the business model and I would say I would need to see much more of a cushion going in, like a sum of money I receive at the start that helps me fund the club, rather than having to send a cheque into the FAI to be a member, like a subscription for the league. I would want to see a guaranteed pot of money starting out. That's how you'll attract investors. Leagues around Europe, said to you, it's media rights they work off. Yes, ticketing money is one thing, and different membership clubs like Sligo or Shamrock Rovers, etc., would have. We're missing the broadcast funds. We're missing significant partnership funds. We're missing significant funds from data. The clubs know this. That's discussions we've had. Whoever runs the league must deliver in them areas.
So Dan McDonald a couple of weeks ago did a great piece on the finances around the league and how much comes into the league. And in that piece that he wrote, broadcasting funds between the two major broadcasters, 400,000, paying for rights.
I cannot confirm or deny that. That's a commercial agreement between the Football Association of Ireland and the various.
How much
parties.
do you think that's where it's at, or like if that is the commercial value right now, where do you think it can go to?
I think it can go a good bit further. I think that, for example, he mentioned about sponsorships. I think there's a significant uplift there, but it's, having worked in sponsorship for a long time, timing's critical. So you need to have leverage, which is competition in the market for something, whether it's between broadcasters or partnerships. So if there's nobody competing for it, if you're going to broadcasters saying, can you do us, I wouldn't say a favour, but, you know, it's costing the broadcaster money. to show something. That's not a good place to be in. And, you know, the facts of the matter are that when we show matches on a Friday night, if some of the broadcasters put on a film, which cost them significantly less than having 8 or 10 cameras or something, they could get higher viewership for something that's much easier for them to do. However, you can get a broadcaster that's trying to break into a market that's looking to sell subscriptions, for example. The timing can be just right, and they might see this football that we play in times that other European leagues don't play.
As a selling point, obviously.
Yeah, it's a really good selling point from what, you know, yeah, it's a really good selling point, the fact that we play in the summer football when other leagues are not playing. So there's significant opportunity for the League of Ireland there. But as I said to you earlier, timing's critical. Having the people who have the gravitas and the ability to do these big deals is absolutely critical.
And speaking of timing, another one you mentioned there was post-Brexit. How do you plan on getting money out of two governments that are, by the looks of it, going to be broke post-Brexit? Like, that funding for the League of Ireland is not going to increase post-Brexit. If anything, it might well go down.
Well, the FAI aren't planning on getting any money from the two governments at the moment. For it. That's a different entity, as you know, Kieran's group, that are talking about getting more, getting funding from the two governments. And I understand the perspective, and that could work. But I don't know if there's any certainty around that. I haven't seen it yet. I think that Kieran has done a brilliant job in terms of stimulating people to think about what needs to happen. I really like Kieran. I've met him a few times. I spoke to him on the phone a lot. I really like what he's doing. I'm delighted somebody jumped forward and came with something that's, I'd say, revolutionary, but some of the thinking around some of the stuff he has is really good. And if anything, it's kicked the ass of all, certainly, to say, God, you can do so much better. I suppose the FAI knew that anyway, but he's really fast-tracked that. So he has fed very much into narrative. If the clubs decide to go with the All-Ireland League, that's what the clubs decide to do. I certainly could not say that the two governments, I haven't met them to talk about that stuff. So Kieran is saying, and that group is saying, that there is funds available. And if there is, I take them at their word.
There's obviously one massive marketing stream, a financial stream, that's not being tapped into here, and that is, we've probably got 10 of the biggest IT social media companies in the world here in Ireland, the likes of the Facebooks, the Googles, the Twitters, and we don't seem to have tapped into them or into their local community spirit. Or, like, as we know, Google mentioned a couple of weeks ago about a housing program that they were willing to get behind. Do you know if any of our clubs have approached these guys? Have the organisation approached these guys in any form of way to help support the league? Or,
I don't know if the clubs personally have approached them. I know the FAI has approached some of these big companies who are housed here in terms of their global companies that just happen to be in Dublin. But you're right, they do have community projects. Just recently we had a commercial strategy that was being built at the FAI for the next few years. And certainly within that, that's a priority. I mean, the likes of Google and Facebook and eBay and all these big American companies, we believe there's great potential there, not just in cash, but in terms of how we promote the league. I mean, media rights are changing so dramatically in terms of how things are being shown. I know, for example, the Spanish FA have the Copa del Rey they're selling at the moment, and they're looking at all sorts of weird and wonderful solutions, whether it's Amazon or Netflix and all these things.
The damage that's been done, though, Noel, say, for example, approaching companies like this, and not even as big as those, just sponsorship terms, like, how receptive are they now in dealing with the FAI because of what's gone on, say, in the last few years?
I suppose when I came in, we were losing our car sponsorship. That was done before any of that happened in March, April. So Ford had already declared that they were finishing up with the FAI, for example. That was our urgent need. Nissan, who are also UEFA Champions League partners, came in and more than replaced that, and they'll be wonderful partners for the FAI. Our discussions with companies, I think the reports that come out, the independent directors, who we hope will be high profile people who've got a really great track record in governance and running organisations, etc., you'll see a new face of the FAI very soon. We're all looking forward to that, and I think that the quality of the independent directors will be very important. How the FAI responds to all the reports and make sure that we deliver or we implement all of the recommendations that come from the governance review, which is 78 recommendations, COSI, which is coming quite soon, the Sport Ireland report, Mazars, which is our own report, coming out later in the year. How we implement the recommendations, that we do it in total and in full, rather than Genesis, where they left out a couple that should have been implemented that were quite crucial. How we implement them reports in total will get a lot of scrutiny, and so they should. But the people in here, in the FAI, have to really want, and I know they do, they really want a brilliant football organisation that we can all be proud of. I am extremely excited about the future of Irish football. When I came in, it was a very strange time, I would have to say. I remember arriving in Abbottstown the first Monday morning. We just had a cyber attack over the weekend, which was the last thing we probably needed. And it felt like, you know, the end of the world. I can tell you now, 4.5 months in, that there's a humility, of course, and so there should be. But there is a confidence. There is green shoots. Just in what we're talking about today, which is the League of Ireland, and if you want to talk about the Women's National League, I can.
What about the staff of the FAI? Has morale lifted amongst them, Noel?
Yeah, I mean, even a simple thing. I mean, we meet the staff very regularly. I have general manager round tables. They can talk about anything. We've just started the FAI Connect, which is basically the staff platform. The council, 12 people will be elected onto the staff council. We'll have our first meeting at the end of October, early November, where we can talk about things from the size of the kettle in the canteen to their pensions, to the organigram, to the structures. So you'll have 12 people elected from the staff who can talk about it. We've brought in things like lunchtime football, which might seem simple enough, but all these things feed into
pitch.
Yeah, all these things feed into.
I hope you're not going.
All these things feed into it. I think if you ask the staff, I mean, in the Aviva Stadium recently, we had 150 or so. Anyone was available could come in. Vera Powell spoke about her career. Tom Moan gave a brilliant presentation on our under-19s getting to the last four in Europe. Stephen Kenny spoke about the under-21s. I would have spoken about the general side of the FAI, and we could do questions and answers for 45 minutes on anything they wanted. So I'd like to think that there's a new spirit of openness, transparency, trust amongst us. We have nothing to hide. All we want to see, no more or no different to yourselves, possibly even more than you lads, want to see a much better League of Ireland, much better Irish football. We want an FAI we can be proud of, that when people say the word FAI, they go, yes, we're a bit off that. But if we implement all the recommendations that come in, if we go with the right spirit, if people like you feel that it's your FAI, that it's not some group of people that meet in Abbottstown in a clandestine sort of way and make decisions you don't agree with, that's not how it can be run. It has to be open, transparent. Everyone must feel it's their organisation, and that we can grow the game together. I mean, even on the strategy of the league, for example, we're doing consultation today with stakeholders on the overall growth of Irish football. But when we're talking about the League of Ireland, I don't think it should be just the clubs. I think there should be consultation with the media, with journalists, with partners, potential partners, the likes of the big American companies that you discussed, the big international companies. We should ask them, what do they want to see from a league, for example, so they feel part of what we're building and that they buy into our vision.
All right, listen, lads, we'll leave it there. Noel Mooney, many thanks for coming in. Will you miss? When do you finish up?
Yeah, I finish at the end of November.
You'll miss it, right?
On the first day. Do you know what? I have to say, I've enjoyed every moment of it, and will look forward to looking back, and hopefully it goes on to a new level.
And yet, you recently became a dad, and you haven't seen very much of baby Sean.
8 weeks ago, Sean Mooney was born in Tallinn, in Estonia, where my partner's from. I wouldn't have seen her or him if we're here. I see him on FaceTime every single day, but I go over next weekend. It's the third time I've seen him, but hopefully we'll all be reunited as a family in early December.
Get thee to Tallinn. Many thanks for coming in and for sharing your thoughts. That's Noel Mooney, acting FAI General Manager, who has to dash off to another meeting. Before we wrap things up, just a quick word on some of the stuff at the weekend. Bowes securing Europe, James, brilliant achievement.
Absolutely fantastic achievement. I mentioned on this programme, I think it was the last week, I mentioned that Keith should be manager of the year, and people laughed at me. And now people are talking about being manager of the year all week.
We're talking about Bulls, not about you and your... Yeah.
But no, yeah, it's a great achievement for him and the backroom staff and all the players there at Bulls. They've put in a really, really good season, and to qualify for Europe is brilliant. I just hope they don't get a Welsh team getting knocked out in the first round.
UCD relegated, beaten 3-0 by Shamrock Rovers. Joey O'Brien, Graham Cummins and Brandon Kavanagh with the goals. Cork City beat the defending champions Dundalk by 1-0. Crisis. Dundalk, back-to-back defeats, Alan. They're in tatters.
I think they're lulling us into a false sense of... because you look at the cup final next week. I think I was listening to Stewie's comments Friday, and he was saying it might not be a bad thing as well. I don't think the professionalism that they have and the environment that they've created, that they've taken their eye off the ball by any means. They'll be ready to go next week, and once they get Friday night out of the way, I'd say it'll be all eyes. They're probably thinking about the Aviva already, Adrian.
Yeah, Finharps beat Waterford by 1-0. Harps, of course, to play Cabinteely or Drogheda. The second leg is on Friday night at United Park. 1-1 from the first leg in Stradbroke. You were at it, Alan. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I was down at the game, Adrian. It was a good game. It was a big crowd. they played very well, to be fair, both teams. But I think Drogheda probably definitely will be disappointed that they didn't come home with a win.
Second half in particular.
They were all over. And now, in fairness to Cabin Teely, they started quite well. Marty Waters got a great goal after 10, 15 minutes. I wonder, was Drogheda's start due to the fact that they hadn't played in the 3 or 4 weeks? There was a bit of a gap. But they responded really well to that, and they kind of took over then. Once they got a foothold in the game, they took over, dominated for large spells, created loads of chances. But it was looking like maybe one of those frustrating nights for them. The keeper pulled off a good couple of good saves. Stephen McGuinness, they hit the bar. They had a load of chances. But once they did get the equaliser, Jake Hyland with a great goal. They probably could have won it then, a couple of chances after that as well. But I'm sure Tim, looking back on it, even though he might have been disappointed the other night, he'd be happy with the performance, and he'd fancy his chances, I'd say, Friday night at home against Cabin Teely.
Left out one key Premier Division result as well. Derry on the verge of Europe as well. 2-1 winners over Sligo Rovers. Just need a point from the remaining two games.
A point. They've got St Pat's at home and then Finn Harps at home. They win both them games, they'll end up in third position in the league as well. So another good run for Derry City. To tell you the truth, at the start of the season, I didn't think we'd be European candidates.
So what about if Keith's the manager here, where does Declan come into it to finish ahead of Keith?
Well, I think Keith is just, with the squad Keith has, like, Keith is playing under an under 19 squad for most of the year. I think what he's
done. Yeah, but to be fair to Declan,
Declan's done very, very good.
Yeah, like, and the players turnover of players at the start
actual,
of the year.
The recruitment that he did was excellent, was absolutely fantastic, no question about that. A lot of players who have experience in the league, one or two gambles maybe, but that was about it. But I think what Keith has done with that young team.
And I agree, Keith Long's been amazing. Yeah.
In the Women's National League, the results: Shells 2, Wexford Youths 1, Kilkenny 1, Limerick 7, a hat-trick there for Aoife Horgan. DLR Wales well beaten by Pimanche United by 8-0. And Cork City and Galway drew 2-2. On Wednesday night, it's DLR Wales against Shells. And you mentioned it, James. If Shells fail to win that one, then Pimanche will be
That's
champions.
That's the league over, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's an awful shame for the end of the league that it could be Pimanche could be at home and win the league. I think if both teams are playing on that Saturday evening, like the half-six kickoff in Pimanche on Saturday evening, and if that both games were at that time, it would give that a little bit of an edge. Do you know what I mean? Because a win for Shells puts them a point ahead, and then it could be down to Pimanche to win their game on Saturday. Yeah. So I suppose there is a little bit of edge there still. You'd expect.
I agree with James. You're trying to grow the game and improve it, and to have a nail biting finish like you have, and both of them not playing on the same night seems ridiculous.
I don't know what there's obviously some form of reason behind it, but
I think it was postponed from earlier in the year.
And games, because if you look at Limerick, have actually finished their league off. So I think actually this weekend is probably a weekend that wasn't meant to be played.
Yes.
In the first place.
Yes.
But then if it wasn't meant to be played in the first place, why not just change it?
Okay. Pimanche United taking on Cork City, as James mentioned there. Lads, listen, thanks very much for popping in. Busy enough programme, a longer podcast than usual, so we'll leave it there.
No,
thanks once again to Noel Mooney for dropping in. Until the next time, bye bye.